episode 4 of Kings of Anglia podcast. We've got an extra member of the team here today in Mike Bacon. I'm Stuart Watson, and I am joined by a man who has been to the ballet in Holland over the last week, Andy Warren.
Guilty. Cultured. Something that you two could learn a thing or two about. It was a wonderful night out at the ballet in Holland. You'd have loved it.
I've been to the ballet.
Have you?
Yes, I went to the ballet in London about 10 years ago. I'd nipped into the loo. I'd been to McDonald's just near there, and McDonald's toilets were out, so opposite was there, and I went in there.
You just
I watched the ballet. No, I just nipped to the loo.
Okay,
That's close as I got.
Good,
but very cool. Yeah, it's nice to hear, Andy. That is,
yeah, it's make change of pace. I think I might change. I've done football for a long time. I think I might start writing about the ballet. It was very enjoyable.
Excellent.
The things that these people can do with their mainly feet and arms, but it's just ridiculous.
It's nice when you find out people's other interests. It's nice you have that.
It's a new interest. To be clear, I also went to 2 football matches in Holland. So
that's a proper
Holland. It's okay. I've not completely lost touch, but I'd thoroughly recommend the ballet. Very good.
Very good.
Did you enjoy opening the show, Stu? New role for you?
Well, I thought you're always the one sort of saying I'm joined by a man, so I thought I'd flip it onto you today. But yes, in your absence, you managed to swerve a long trip to Middlesbrough. So thanks for that. Went up to Middlesbrough on my own. Funny that your holidays coincided with that one.
But, convenient. Came back pointless as well. We'll get onto that one in a minute. I'm going to take over from now on, Stu, if that's all right.
Please do.
Today, we're recording this on Monday morning, which marks the 10-year anniversary of Marcus Evans completing his takeover of Ipswich Town. So Marcus has been in charge 10 years now. And interestingly enough, his first season in charge finished with Ipswich in 8th. And here we are, December 2017, Ipswich Town in 8th, Stu. It's nicely bookended.
Yeah, it's rather ironic, and it kind of sums up the sense of Ipswich flatlining throughout that 10 years, really. Have they moved forward? No. Have they gone backwards? Probably not. Fairly stable, I guess, as a club when you look at some other clubs that have gone drastically backwards and spiralled down the divisions. On the flip side of that, look at some of the clubs that have overtaken them in that time. Clubs like Leicester going down to League One, coming back up and winning the Premier League kind of sums up all of the agony and the ecstasy and the drama has kind of gone on all around Ipswich Town while they've simply treaded water in the Championship, really. So it's where we're at.
It's kind of a reign of two halves almost for Evans, isn't it? At the beginning, a lot of money was spent, a high-profile manager in Roy Keane, and now very much stable 5 years of Mick McCarthy, and certainly not the money being chucked around as it once was.
No, I mean, I remember when Keane was obviously introduced to the media after Marcus Evans had taken over, and my goodness, I mean, it was unbelievable. The excitement was really high. I mean, Town fans, you know, rightly, you know, if you look at the 10-year period as a whole, it has been very uninspiring. But there's been one or two pretty big highs, of which that was one of them. And the expectation that we always, there was just a desperate hope Keane would do it. That was the thing, especially with Town fans and me. Everyone just hoped this was going to be it. He was going to be the manager for the next 10 years and take us into the Premier League and be this, you know, all-inspiring sort of man. I mean, his press conferences were outstanding. I mean, but it just all drifted away. He was given lots of money. It drifted away. Paul Jewell came in. You know, he bought some pretty big. I mean, we get the Michael Chopras, Lee Bowyers, you know, that came to this club. You know, these are Jimmy Bullards. These guys are on pretty hefty wages, and Marcus Evans was paying it out, and he must have thought at the end of it all, what was that all about?
Well, yeah, and I think there was a moment of sort of realisation that after those first 5 years, Priskin, Lee Martin, J. Emmanuel Thomas, Paul Taylor, a lot of money wasted by those two managers, and he got to a point where he thought, enough's enough there now, and obviously, as Andy says, a tale of two halves. You know, I think he made it very clear to Mick McCarthy from day one that he was going to go down a more frugal approach and hired a manager to get the best out of what he's got, and Mick has certainly done that over the last 5 years. If you take last year's disappointment out of it, it's, you know, they've overachieved, they've punched above their weight. no doubt about it, on largely frees and loans and swaps. The question is, where do they go from here, really? How long is he prepared to keep seeing £5-7 million go down the drain year after year? There's a sense that they're kind of waiting for lightning to strike, that maybe he thinks that if they stumble upon the magic formula one year, who knows, maybe this year could be it, the way they're going at the moment. But you get to the Premier League and all that debt, £89 million at the moment, is wiped out in an instant. But can we realistically see that happening in the next 5-10 years at the moment? I don't know. And at what point does Evans turn around and say, it's not happened, I'm cutting my losses? I really don't know when that point might be.
No. And this is where Town fans, you see, this is where Town, if you just talk from a Town fan perspective, this is where they're at. You know, their patience is now being tested, you know, hugely. That they don't doubt Mick's doing a good job on limited resources. They don't doubt, you know, he hasn't been given the money that Keane. But at the end of the day, they're still asked to pay their season ticket mm-hmm. price, you know, and I believe they went up in the summer as well slightly. I mean, and for that, it's, you know, they just want to see some sort of ambition. It's not a case that is Mick doing a good job. We know he's doing a decent job, a good job on what he's been. But Marcus Evans is going to have to decide, you know, is he just going to keep on this track of, you know, survival in the Championship, or ambition to get in the Premier League? And saying, of course we want to get in the Premier League is one thing, but the game has changed. I know, I mean, I come from the Sir Bobby Robson era, I come from the George Burley era, but those were different eras, and money was nowhere near as important, in quotes, as it is today. Mm-hmm. You know, you can buy, ironically, success. Hey, look at Manchester City. You know, 10 years ago, they were in League One, or what is equivalent of League One now, playing Colchester. You know, now you can't believe that. It's only money that's changed. You know,
it's changed as well, not just in, you're talking 20, 30 years ago, it's changed in the last 5 years as well, the last two, yeah. 3 years. The football financial landscape has moved on dramatically. You look at what Wolves have spending £15 million plus, you know, it's not out of the ordinary for Championship clubs to spend £10 million on a transfer now, which is starting to leave Ipswich behind, I think, in that respect. And I honestly think they've hit a bit of a glass ceiling in terms of their approach at the moment. Can, you know, the best they can hope for is probably what happened a couple of years ago, sneak into the playoffs. You know, I think going into those games against Norwich, even the most ardent and positive Ipswich fans probably thought over two legs they were going to come up short, and I think they're in a very similar position now. He's got them sort of right at the edge of what they're capable of doing, and I honestly think it probably requires a next level of investment to make them that bit more competitive, and I'm not sure that Evans is going to realistically be willing or able to do that, probably willing by the sounds of things, but who knows? You know, the way they're going at the moment, you can't write it off completely, but that's the way I see it at the moment.
But you were telling me a story which made me smile last week, Stuart. Middlesbrough, is it the guy Braithwaite? Does he play for? He's a Middlesbrough lad. And you were telling the story in the programme, a fan had written that Braithwaite looks, quote, a snip at 9 million. Is that right?
Which is more than Mick's spent in 5 years.
No disrespect to Braithwaite, you may well be, but what I'm saying is that is how fans perceive, yeah, 9 million, just as, well, a snip. This guy is not, you know, he's not messy, he's Braithwaite, he's obviously a decent, very decent player, but what I'm saying is that's how fans receive 9 million, as you, yeah, say. Mick, yeah, said, I haven't had 9 million to.
Roy Keane spent 9 million in a season, I think, yeah, for Ipswich, and for that he got Grant Edwards, Lee Martin, Thomas Priskin, Carlos Edwards and Damien Delaney, yeah. So that's
so
that's
much
how
has the, changed
that's how
in a decade
has changed. As I said, we're recording this on Monday at lunchtime today. We're doing some web chats and some videos as well, which it'd be good to go back and listen to those. We'll touch on Evans an awful lot more there, Stu. Let's go to Reading, some happy times and another win. You two were both at the game Saturday. Good performance. It sounded as if another classic soak it up and dish it out kind of job.
Yeah, I mean, I thought first half was decent for it. I mean, it's difficult, isn't it? A team comes and a team plays with a lot of possession, and the home fans rightly stand there thinking, what's this team doing mugging us off on our own pitch with the ball all the time and we're just running around? But at the end of the day, Town went in 2-0 up, and you know, you can say what you like, and Stu has done quite a lot of this, haven't you, Stu, in the paper today about, you know, obsession, and I think that does sum it up. The football seems to become rather obsessed with stats. The television channels do it when they go over to speak to somebody up there, is how many corners, how many this, and there's always possession. And it doesn't matter what the score is, that possession stat is there. And I always think, well, what's the relevance of the possession? The only one that counts is what the score is. And you could just sense, I mean, at half time I went down to the media room and so I heard someone saying, you know, gosh, we're 2-0 up and we've hardly had the ball, Town fan. And it's difficult because to me, that's the game is all about winning. And I thought it just broke well. I thought they look so exciting going forward this season. Far more exciting than they have done for many years, not just this year before as well, and probably year before that. They look far more exciting going forward. They have some real pace in Salina. Well, Waghorn and Garner bounce off each other. They love it. You know, I mean, Goldrick didn't even start. Look, so you know, there's lots going on there. I thought it was decent. Was that decent before?
Tell you what, if you get two teams playing this passing football against each other, it's not good. I went to a Dutch game on Wednesday, away from the ballet. Went to a Feyenoord game. They played Heer en Veen, and they both played in a similar style to Reading, passing it, and it's really not very good. So maybe we should be thankful that Ipswich are doing things the way that they are, because otherwise we'd have a division of people just slowly moving the ball around. 50-50% possession, I think that was after that. And nothing really happened.
It's more than one way to skin a rabbit. And, I think we know from watching Ipswich last couple of years that direct football, when done badly, is horrendous to watch. It was very predictable and very easy to nullify. But, you know, it's the same with passing football as well. I thought Reading were dreadfully dull to watch on Saturday. You know, it was passing, but passing for the sake of passing and doing it along the back four, right back, centre back, left back, back along again, back to the goalkeeper. It's dull. And it's at the end of the day, as Mick McCarthy says, it's about playing to your strengths, utilising the personnel in your squad and doing it well. Ipswich weren't playing direct football particularly well post-Murphy. They're back to doing it well again. And I thought they were the far more exciting side on Saturday. Likewise in the 4-2 win against Forest, where they had 70-odd% of the ball as well that day. It's been the same in pretty much all of the home games. I thought, you know, watching Ipswich, they got you back on the edge of your seat again at the moment. You know, Mike's mentioned a few of the players there. With Salina takes people on, Waghorn presses from the front, Garner goes to war with opposition centre-back. Spence on Saturday was
excellent, Spence.
Setting off on marauding runs, and as a fan, that's what you want to have, a sense of anticipation that something could happen out of nothing, and you've got that back with Ipswich again at the moment, and the goals they're scoring, that's great.
I mean, I get Town fans' frustrations with the whole thing, and I get, you know, Mick coming out with things towards the fans that really he'd have been better not to have said and all this stuff, and people's memories are long sometimes when it comes to that type of thing, and they don't forget, and as fans are staying away, the crowd wasn't very big. You know, there's probably a whole host of reasons for that, but a lot of it is because the club have, you know, alienated people. But if we're just talking about what's on the pitch at the moment, at this moment in time, which is what we're here to talk about, you know, the football is okay. You know, I won't have it that people say it's boring, it's rubbish, it's just hoofing it forward. It isn't at all. You know, there's a bit of excitement there, and I'll tell you something else. As a bunch of lads, if whatever Mick McCarthy says, when he says they give a shift, which is one of his great, you know, they do. Mm-hmm. And some of the joyous expressions on their faces when they've won. There's a great picture in our paper of Waghorn and Chambers just looking at each other, just sort of doing some sort of karate chop. I don't know what they were doing, but the joy in their faces at the final whistle. It means something to them to win football matches. They're not going through the motions in their blue and white shirts. And I like that. I like the fact that they want to win. I know that sounds obvious. Of course, they all want to win. Do they? There's a lot of people, you know, higher up in the Premier League, particularly fans, will say, "Huh, I don't know if they do want to win." You know, they're on 80,000-90,000 a week.
Have to look at the squad that Mick inherited, don't you? When he arrived 5 years ago, that was a squad of players on short-term contracts, loans, coming up to the end of their deals, and you wouldn't necessarily think that was a squad that really gave the shift every week Mick would want.
I remember Richie Wellens giving an interview, who was on loan towards the end of the Jewel era, and he basically, I think it was after the game, the caretaker game under Hutchins, where they lost 3-0 here to Sheffield Wednesday, if you remember.
Yeah.
And he sort of said that basically the players didn't care enough, and he said the loan players cared more than the actual players. If you go further back, Shane Supple now talks about why he left Ipswich Town, and he said one of the moments of realisation that football wasn't for him was when players were sort of grumbling that they might get into the playoffs because it might cut short their holidays, and if they got promoted, they might have to, you know, they might be let go and all that sort of stuff. Whereas, you know, even last season under Mick, when things weren't going well, you know, they do play for him, they do play for each other. It does mean a lot to them. In Chambers, they've got one of their best and most inspirational captains for many years. And you can, as you say, you see the team celebrations, the way they all celebrate together. You know, we interview them and see a bit of an insider things, and they do get on well away from the pitch. They do socialise with their partners and go out for meals and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, we've talked a lot about the big money that's being spent, but all those sort of qualities are really priceless.
And that's a lot of that is down to Mick, isn't it? That's Mick that's done that. And it's not necessarily the constraints that Mick's working under that's done that. That doesn't just come from free transfers and cheap footballers either, does it? That's Mick's management skills.
Yeah, he's a man manager, isn't he? Players play for him, and they like his fairness, and they like his honesty. And if Chambers is out for a game because he's had five bookings, he doesn't penalise that if they've won, which I think they did, didn't they? Beat Forest 4-2 without Chambers. Mick doesn't turn around and say, well, I'm going to keep the same team. Chambers is somebody who has always, you know, given him 100%, and the law, he works both ways. And just because he's missed a game because he's been suspended for five yellows, he goes straight back in. I know it sounds obvious, well, he's the captain, he should. Well, no, it's not always obvious. You know, you've won 4-2 at home, played well, why would you train? Well, but Mick has this loyalty to players, and overall I think that's a good thing. I mean, of course, fans listen to this and say, well, yeah, so if you don't pay season tickets to watch some of the, and they'll go back to last season rubbish from last, which was right. But the trouble is, as I said, so many poor things and bad things went on last season. Yep. It's going to take a little while to feed that out, and it's going to have. And there are a lot of fans that say, "Well, I'm not going until Mick goes," and all this sort of stuff. And I understand all that. I totally get it. I fully appreciate it. But right here, right now, you know, I think they're doing all right, and Mick has bonded a good set of boys then.
Probably got the biggest test of them all coming up this week, though. The festive season begins, and it begins at Molineux. Where they take on Wolves, but Ipswich need to be ready for Christmas. But guys, are you ready for Christmas?
I'm ready for Christmas. My tree was up about 3 weeks ago. Yeah, everything's done.
Christmas jumper on the other day. Didn't
I had
you?
My Christmas jumper on with it, and the did lights you? Still worked from last year.
Very good.
When I flicked the battery still, the light came straight on, which was quite a thing because I hadn't worn it obviously.
What kind of lights are we talking about? A tree?
It was a Christmas pudding. It was a red jumper with a big Christmas pudding on it, wasn't it, Stu? And I had a few lights dotted around it. And when I pressed my button and the lights flashed straight on, I was so hot all down the office. It was unbelievable. But I was determined to. Stu, of course, had a press conference, so he came all dabbed up with collar and tie and looking the part, which called it rather the sports room because, you know, we were trying to make a bit of a Christmas effort. Stuart really did look smart, but Stuart, you are, no doubt you are.
Yeah,
you're all Christmas in your house.
Yeah, a little 18-month-year-old daughter at home, so she's right hyped up at the moment. So can't wait for Christmas. Just finding a bit of family work balance in between the busy old schedule, isn't it? But looking forward to Christmas at home, and also looking forward to the fixtures coming up as well. Because beyond Wolves, we've got a fairly kind fixture list with a couple of home games over Christmas as well. So Ipswich, as we've been touching upon, have been very good at home, haven't they? So if they can keep that going, they'd be going into the new year in fine fettle.
Yeah, Wolves away Saturday to start off with. Then it's QPR at home on Boxing Day, followed by, I think it's the 30th, December the 30th, at home to Derby. And what are we thinking from these? Obviously, Wolves appear to be setting the pace and leaving the pack behind.
Well, on the face of it, Wolves is a write-off, isn't it? The way they're going, they're starting to stretch away at the top. So they should be, really, when the silly money that they've been spending. They've got the Portuguese super agent Mendes, who's brokering some ridiculous deals for them at the moment. But the caveat is it's Mick going back to his old stomping ground, and he's got a very good record there since he's come back. I don't think he's actually lost at Molineux since he's returned to Ipswich in 2012.
He's got a very similar derby record at Wolves, I think.
Yeah, so there is no doubt an edge there. Every time Mick goes back, I think he always feels that he's got a point to prove. He always likes to remind people that he thinks he would have kept them up had they not sacked him. And I still remember the first, very early when he first came back to Ipswich, they went there and won, and Mick and TC really giving it some on the pitch afterwards. So But given all of that, really, it's going to be a tough old away day, isn't it? Probably in the same mould as Middlesbrough recently and Aston Villa and Cardiff, where they've come away empty-handed. As I keep saying, these sort of away games are a bonus if you get anything from them, like the Derby win. It's the home form that is the cornerstone to Ipswich's season, as proved in the playoff year. 7 wins from 11 at Portman Road now, so I think, you know, bonus on Saturday, and it's really those two games over Christmas at home that they really need to be targeting for points.
Mm. Always nice to be home on Boxing Day, isn't it?
Yes, yes, it is nice to be home on Boxing Day, and of course, it's quite unusual to have two home games in the 4 days. I think it is over the years. I usually had one away and one at
home. Didn't have a home Boxing Day for years, did they? At one stage,
I think it's good, and it's really their home form is obviously good, and those two home games, if they could win both those home games, I think the Derby one would be particularly tough. But if they did, it's been a really good Christmas. Whatever happens at Wolverhampton happens, but who would write off Mick going to Wolverhampton and an early waghorn goal in the fifth minute.
Okay.
Right,
very
that
nice.
Nicely tucks away, and that's puts them one up, and then it's a gritty Ipswich rearguard action, which we all know they are more than capable of.
Sounds like Derby all over again. We had these chats before Derby, didn't we? Writing them off. Look at these players, look at this galaxy of stars on the pitch. But although Wolves is probably a level up from those Derby players, but you really wouldn't
put you write a Mick McCarthy away performance off at your peril at any club, you know, in this league, no matter how high they're flying, he'll come up with a 1-0 somewhere. Perhaps it'd be nice on Saturday, wouldn't it?
We keep talking, actually. One of the criticisms at the moment is about sort of being too negative away from home, and why are they trying to park the bus and all the rest of it. I think that's slightly unfair, actually. He's still playing the same system. He's still playing most of the attacking players. And they didn't create anywhere near enough chances up at Middlesbrough. But it's the timing of the goals in this division. Yeah. They got an early goal on Saturday, and that set the tone. They scored their second against Reading just when Reading was starting to get on top. I really do think that the timing of goals is crucial in the Championship, and they shot themselves in the foot twice at Middlesbrough. They'd be playing okay, actually, and then they two soft goals either side of half time, and that was always going to be a tough ask. But as we saw at Derby, if you get your noses in front and the onus is on the home team to then, you know, come back at you and break you down, and the home crowd get a bit nervy, it's a different kettle of fish. So I don't think they've been that bad away from home at all. I know they've not been getting the same results as at home, but they've been playing okay home and away, to be fair.
And I think what we're drifting over a little bit is the fact that I think about a month ago everyone was talking about, well, Ipswich have been playing this have only really been playing these teams from below them, and they've got this very hard run coming up, and we're sort of just whistling through this and they're doing all right. You know, the Derby was obviously tough, Forest was tough, you know, Reading potentially could be tough. I mean, yeah, they lost at Middlesbrough, we know that. But what I'm saying is, this very tough period that everyone was talking about is coming right now, you're going to be tested. Well, they're coming through it, you know, there's still a little way to go, but they're coming through it nicely.
Hopefully they carry on doing so. Happy Christmas for everyone. Let's move on to our Football Room 101. Stu has got a particularly good record in this so far. We've done three, and he's won three. The last one was a couple of weeks ago, where Stu's extra match officials running around in their trousers and batons won 55% of the vote to 45% for my ridiculous long-winded cup draws. But Mike, you're with us today. Have you got anything?
Well, I've got something which I know won't go down very well with the coaches and physios and all this other, who'll tell me I haven't got a clue what I'm talking about, which is not unusual. But it's this running out at half time. After half time and going to the middle of the pitch and standing and all sprinting off together in a little circle, and they'll sprint back in again, and they'll sprint out again, and then sprint back again. Now, that I'm sure that's obviously a very good reason for that. I'm sure it's obviously just a warm set, I'm sure of that, but I just don't understand what I can't believe it makes any difference. Well,
it looks nice,
it looks lovely. And more support, I'll tell you something else, because I watch a lot of non league as well, it's drifting down to the non league game. Oh yes, the non-league team are starting to do it. I've seen it. I even saw it. I think it was about an under-16 match last season or season before. The coach had them all out. Now I know physios go straight on to me and say, that's because well, can't they just run on with a couple of balls, just knock it back among themselves? Why they would have to get a little circle, run out? And you watch one or two players who they're thinking, I really can't bother with this. I know they're all trying to be very professional, but why do they go? Oh, here we go. So that gets me.
The one that is similar one, just adding to yours, that there's also some teams that put out a small ladder
little ladder of cones.
And
yeah.
some cones. A bloke has gone out and set those cones up, and these footballers come out, do one little shuttle run, that's and right. then they're off. Do they really need the cones? Can you not just tell, can you not just say, lads, you know what you're doing, don't need the cones.
Don't ever doubt the importance of cones into the football. As a level one football coach myself, cones are very important, I can tell you. You have to make use of cones.
How many cones have you got in the boot of your...
I haven't got so many now, but I used to have loads. Cones and the bibs. I'll tell you, the importance is unbelievable.
Stu, what have you got for us?
Picking up on a similar theme there about sort of... it drifting down to another level. Footballers with no sense of imagination, copycat footballers, and you know this is a fashion thing. Things they buy. If you go up to the training ground car park at Ipswich Town at any football club, they've all got a Range Rover. Why? Just because that's what they do. They've all got sleeve tattoos because that's what they do. It's you know, it's just there's no sense of imagination. No one wants to stand out from the crowd and be individual. The reason that made me sort of think of this is Callum Connolly did an interview after the game on Saturday, and Cole Skews had told us jokingly before the match that he keeps getting on to Callum about sorting out his haircut and this ridiculous fringe and all the rest of it. And Connolly sort of hit back and said, well, actually, I'm quite happy to have something different to the usual sort of sweep-over quiff that they've all got rocking at the moment. And all the rest of it. So I quite like the fact when a footballer does something a little bit different, be it haircut or non-tattoos or some black football boots or something like that. But the rest of them seem to be sheep, don't they?
Yeah.
David McGoldrick's got some nice just black boots.
Does he?
I think he
yes,
wears.
I think he does actually. Yeah,
it's nice.
He
looks very nice.
Yeah, nice to see.
Centre halves wearing bright yellow boots. This isn't my suggestion. I might save this for another time actually. But that annoys me.
That would
well.
Get my vote.
And white boots. You need to earn those boots. Yes. I'm going to go at this from a different angle, as well as the ballet. Went to a couple of football games in Holland, and it really annoyed me when you're trying to get back to your seat and nobody moves their legs for you, and you've got to squeeze your legs but in this gap that's about 3 inches between the seat and the people's legs, and they just sit there.
Now, you've got a decision to make in that situation. Do you give the person you're going past... bum or crotch? What are you dishing up to them? You have to make a decision in that instance when you're going to inch past.
Into his water past, I imagine.
I would always face the pitch.
Yeah,
would be my approach to that. But particularly the Dutch fans didn't want to let me through.
Didn't
why?
They?
Why not?
Well, that's rude, isn't it?
Racist.
Very rude. That indeed. Well, yeah. I mean, it's. You could have done a bit of a centre half and stood on a few toes, I suppose. You went past that, they'd soon jump up then. But or accidentally fall back in the lap of the first one, and the rest would all soon get up then.
Some of these guys were quite fearsome, though.
Oh, were they?
Proper skinheads.
Oh, right.
They, you know, they had.
Well, what did you have to get up for?
Well, I'd just gone to get hot chocolate.
Well,
couldn't
you wait? Well, can't wait till half time and everyone else goes. You're not one of those. Who steps.
I was after half.
You know, sort of bloke in the cinema, aren't you? Gets up halfway through, just everyone to go and get some popcorn halfway through.
Very, very much half time, and very disappointing to get down there. And there's no sign of a Bovril at the Amsterdam Arena, or in Rotterdam actually.
That's terrible.
No Bovril.
Terrible.
Can you have a beer at your seats?
You can, yeah. You can have a few other things at your seats as well. Which,
can you?
Which,
in Amsterdam, yeah.
More so in Rotterdam, actually, some of the no smoking rules are flouted considerably.
That's why they enjoy their football so much in De Holland. You do know that. They don't really watch them what's going on.
I think should we leave it at that note?
I think we'd best before we find out too much about your holiday.
As always, we'll put a vote out on Twitter for Football Room 101. Try not to vote Stu's in again because he's getting a bit big for his boots, as you can see by him trying to present the show today. That won't be happening again. Mike, thanks for joining us.
As a pleasure.
You're welcome back anytime.
Well, after this, you never know.
Stu, thank you. And don't forget to catch everything on the websites online. And in the papers, and we'll see you soon.